chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are grass make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot to cover this evening, and we've got to take note towards the end of our broadcast of the shooting that occurred out in El Paso. What a tragic thing that happened. We'll be covering the debate, a Democratic debate earlier mid part of this week, the Baltimore controversy, and James Comey not being indicted. There was a criminal referral out of the Office of the Inspector General of the Department of Justice, and there was a turndown as to by the DOJ as to not wanting to proceed with any kind of indictment on James Comey. We're going to cover first some controversial types of attacks. One on Kamala Harris, launched by Tulsi Gabbard. Here we go now with that back and forth right now.
Senator Harris, you have also been quite critical of Vice President Biden's policies on race, specifically on the issue of busing in the 1970s, having benefited from busing when you were a young child. Vice President Biden says that your current position on busing, you're opposed to federally mandated busing, that position is the same as his position. Is he right?
That is simply false. And let's be very clear about this. When Vice President Biden was in the United States Senate working with segregationists to oppose busing, which was the vehicle by which we would integrate America's public schools, had I been in the United States Senate at that time, I would have been completely on the other side of the aisle. And let's be clear about this. Had those segregationists their way, I would not be a member of the United States Senate, Cory Booker would not be a member of the United States Senate, and Barack Obama would not have been in the position to nominate him to the title he now holds. And so, on that issue, we could not be more apart, which is that the Vice President has still failed to acknowledge that it was wrong to take the position that he took at that time. Now, I would like to also talk about this conversation about Eric Garner, because I, too, met with his mother. And one of the things that we've got to be clear about is that this president of the United States, Donald Trump, while he has been in office, has quietly been allowing the United States Department of Justice to shut down consent decrees, to stop pattern and practice investigations. On that case, we also know that the Civil Rights Division of the United States Department of Justice said charges should have been filed, but this United States Department of Justice usurped, and I believe it is because that president did not want those charges to go forward, and they overrode a decision by the Civil Rights Division of the United States Department of Justice. Under my administration, the Civil Rights Division will reign, and there will be independent investigations.
Vice President Biden, I want to give you a chance to respond to what Senator Harris just said.
When Senator Harris was the Attorney General for 8 years, in the state of California, there were two of the most segregated school districts in the country, in Los Angeles and in San Francisco. And she did not, I didn't see a single solitary time she brought a case against them to desegregate them. Secondly, she also was in a situation where she had a police department when she was there that, in fact, was abusing people's rights. And the fact was that she, in fact, was told by her own people, that her own staff, that she should do something about and disclose to defense attorneys like me that you, in fact, the police officer did something that did not give you information that would exculpate your client. She didn't do that. She never did it. And so what happened? Along came a federal judge and said, enough, enough, and he freed a thousand of these people. If you doubt me, Google 1,000 prisoners freed Kamala Harris.
Thank you, Vice President Biden. And Senator Harris, your response?
That this is simply not true. And as Attorney General of California, where I ran the second largest Department of Justice in the United States, second only to the United States Department of Justice, I am proud of the work we did, work that has received national recognition for what has been the important work of reforming a criminal justice system and cleaning up the consequences of the bills that you passed when you were in the United States Senate for decades. It was the work of creating the one of the first in the nation initiatives around reentering former offenders and getting them jobs and counseling.
Thank you, Senator.
I did the work as Attorney General of putting body cameras on special agents
in
the Congresswoman state of California,
I'm
proud of that work.
I want to bring in Congresswoman Gabbard. Congresswoman Gabbard, you took issue with Senator Harris confronting Vice President Biden at the last debate. You called it a, quote, false accusation that Joe Biden is a racist. What's your response?
I want to bring the conversation back to the broken criminal justice system that is disproportionately negatively impacting black and brown people all across this country today. Now, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president, but I'm deeply concerned about this record. There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Senator Harris, your response.
As the elected Attorney General of California, I did the work of significantly reforming the criminal justice system of a state of 40 million people, which became a national model for the work that needs to be done. And I am proud of that work. And I am proud of making a decision to not just give fancy speeches or be in a legislative body and give speeches on the floor, but actually doing the work of being in the position to use the power that I had to reform a system that is badly in need of reform. That is why we created initiatives that were about reentering former offenders and getting them counseling. It is why, and because I know that criminal justice system is so broken, that I am an advocate for what
we need to do
to not only decriminalize, but legalize marijuana in the United States.
I want to bring Congresswoman Gabbard back in. You're responsible.
The bottom line is, Senator Harris, when you were in a position to make a difference and an impact in these people's lives, you did not. And worse yet, in the case of those who were on death row, innocent people, you actually blocked evidence from being revealed that would have freed them until you were forced to do so. There is no excuse for that. And the people who suffered under your reign as prosecutor, you owe them an apology.
Senator Harris.
My entire career, I have been personally opposed to the death penalty, and that has never changed. And I dare anybody who is in a position to make that decision to face the people I have faced to say, I will not seek the death penalty. That is my background. That is my work. I am proud of it. I think you can judge people by when they are under fire, and it's not about some fancy opinion on a stage, but when they're in the position to actually make a decision, what do they do? When I was in the position of having to decide whether or not to seek a death penalty on cases I prosecuted, I made a very difficult decision that was not popular to not seek the death penalty. History shows that, and I am proud of those decisions.
Senator Harris, thank you very much. Senator Bennett, a question for you. Why are you the best candidate to heal the racial divide that exists in this country today, which has been stoked by the president's racist rhetoric?
Yeah, first of all, the president's racist rhetoric should be enough grounds for everybody in this country to vote him out of office. That one thing alone should be enough. Second, Don, I want to answer your question by tagging on the conversation we were just having. This is the fourth debate that we have had and the second time that we have been debating what people did 50 years ago with busing when our schools are as segregated today as they were 50 years ago. We need a conversation about what's happening now. And when there's a group of kids in this country that don't get preschool through no fault of their own, and another group does, equal is not equal. And we've got a group of K-12 schools that are good because families can spend $1 million, and you've got the Detroit public schools that are as segregated as they were, equal is not equal. And let me tell you something else, son. I believe you can draw a straight line from slavery through Jim Crow, through the banking and the redlining to the mass incarceration that we were talking about on this stage a few minutes ago. But you know what other line I can draw? 88% of the people in our prisons dropped out of high school. Let's fix our school system and maybe we can fix the prison pipeline that we have.
Thank you, Senator Bennett.
They were attacking each other, Biden and Kamala Harris, about busing. Then it got into the allegations that Kamala Harris violated exculpatory type of rules when she was Attorney General. And Tulsi Gabbard really hit her pretty hard. So you see they're beginning to really get back at each other and so forth and so on. And they're down to about eight to nine different candidates now that are being qualified for the next debate. We'll have that list up on The Secret Truth. We'll put that up this evening of the list of the candidates that qualify for the next debate. Beto phoned in to live coverage of the El Paso, and I think he's headed there. Greg Abbott is headed out there. This was just a shooting that happened out in El Paso this morning, and there are multiple deaths, and it's just great tragedy. But we're going to cover some of these other things first and then get back to that later. James Comey recently he, by his own self-confession, had misused classified information, turned it over to a friend, who in turn turned it over to the New York Times to start the investigation on Trump with the Russians or something. And this turned out to be just a false investigation to start with. And now the Inspector General referred to the Department of Justice a criminal referral concerning that, James Comey, and the Department of Justice is saying that we defer not to bring criminal charges or indict James Comey. So here's some of the back and forth opinions about what should have been done instead of not indicting Comey, who was obviously guilty of those charges. Here we go now.
For 2.5 years, you may have noticed, official Washington has cracked down hard on even minor violations of the law. Roger Stone, for example, faces a life-ending felony trial because he apparently couldn't remember details from a totally irrelevant email exchange he once had. Paul Manafort, meanwhile, is lucky to die behind bars, in part because he didn't file the right paperwork before he lobbied for Ukraine. If you're involved in politics in Washington, suddenly there's not a lot of room for error, unless you happen to be Jim Comey. If you're Jim Comey, you can do pretty much whatever you feel like. You can flagrantly break the law, and then you can brag about it, and nobody will touch you. How do we know this? We know this because Comey actually did that. Shortly before he was fired from the FBI, Comey wrote memos describing his private meetings with his boss, the president. Comey then leaked those memos. Some of them contained classified information. That is a crime. How do we know it's a crime? Well, Comey himself conceded that in an interview. Watch.
I think of a leak as an unauthorized disclosure of classified information.
Really? That's it?
That's a leak? That's how I thought about it as FBI director.
So by Comey's own definition, which you just heard, he committed a crime. Comey was responsible for the unauthorized disclosure of classified information. And yet, according to Comey, this was legal because it wasn't leaking. It was, quote, communicating.
But you did leak memos. I mean, is it okay for somebody at the FBI to leak something, an internal document, even if it's not classified? Isn't that leaking?
Well, there's a whole lot wrong with your question, Anderson. First, I didn't leak memos. I asked a friend to communicate the substance of one unclassified memo.
Whether you
can
you
I finish
know,
for a second?
Sure. Okay.
One unclassified memo to the media.
It wasn't a leak. I asked a friend to communicate the contents of a memo. Well, this is a lie on multiple levels, and as it turns out, the FBI has determined that Comey's leaked memos did in fact contain classified information that Comey failed to redact. Keep in mind, this was the head of the FBI. This is a guy who knew what the rules were and ignored them. He committed a crime. Comey admits that he committed that crime entirely for political reasons.
When the president said he was eager to find leakers and would like to nail one to the door as a message.
I said that.
Shouldn't you be nailed to the door then? I mean, aren't you a leaker? Aren't you a leaker? Plenty of people leak non-classified information to reporters, and the White House and the FBI gets upset about it.
The FBI gets upset when people make unauthorized disclosures of protected information. I intentionally gave this information to a friend, intending that it be out in the media. I wanted it to get out in the media.
I wanted it to get out in the media. A memo with classified material in it. What you just saw is a confession. Comey admitted everything on camera. If you were prosecuting this case, it would be open and shut. But it won't be prosecuted. Apparently, Comey will never be tried for the crimes he committed. According to The Hill's John Solomon, citing a source, the DOJ has decided not to prosecute James Comey on the grounds that punishing him for breaking the law would seem, quote, petty and vindictive. Of course, petty and vindictive describes the culture of the FBI under Jim Comey. Petty and vindictive is the reason Roger Stone has been treated far more harshly by federal authorities than Jeffrey Epstein ever was. Petty and vindictive sums up the entire Russia investigation, in fact, an investigation that destroyed people's lives for the crime of supporting Donald Trump for president. Petty and vindictive. Jim Comey disgraced the FBI. He abused the public's trust in him. In 2016, he repeatedly injected himself into the political arena, and by his own admission, he considered the political effect of his actions when he did so. His subordinates, meanwhile, people like Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, loathsome people, repeatedly conspired to use FBI resources to sabotage a presidential campaign they didn't like. Then in 2017, there was the climax of the affair. According to reports, Comey lied to the president, his boss, telling him that he was not under investigation when, in fact, Comey was maneuvering to begin an investigation. Then, with the leaks that he just admitted to on camera you saw, Comey launched the Russia Special Counsel investigation. From the very beginning, there was no evidence to justify such an investigation. There never was. Russia collusion was always just a Hillary Clinton campaign talking point, an excuse for her humiliating election defeat. Comey knew that. Everyone who paid attention knew that. But instead of behaving responsibly, he indulged the same conspiracy theory that CNN pushed for 2 years. Prosecuting Jim Comey for his crimes, crimes he's admitted to, would not be petty or vindictive. Just the opposite. It might reassure the rest of us that justice is, in fact, blind in this country. We're losing faith in that.
Coming up next is when President Trump begins to go out onto, his helicopter to get, helicoptered over to Andrews Joint, airport there. Then he says quite a bit. And this is one time he was going to his golf course in New Jersey. Before he departed, he started getting into China and a plethora of other things. And I thought we're going to play that because it's sort of interesting and it's sort of an insight into his psychology and what he's thinking. Earlier he had this controversy with Baltimore and they accused him of being a racist, but Baltimore is just a basket case. It's got over 17,000 vacant houses, abandoned houses. But this doesn't matter. He's a racist because he's calling out, Baltimore for what it is, a really basket case. But, listen to this, this helicopter, you could say, pronouncements before he gets on there. Here we go right now.
And they're off. Wheels are up from Joint Base Andrews there in Maryland. The president is headed to New Jersey for the weekend. You saw it live here on News Now, which is a part of Fox10Phoenix.com. So now let's go to what we call tape playback of the president leaving the White House.
Because I felt that Congressman Ratcliffe was being treated very unfairly. I was reading the press. And I think I am a student of the press. And I could see that the press was treating him, I thought, very unfairly. He's an outstanding man. And I asked him, I said, do you want to go through this for 2 or 3 months, or would you want me to maybe do something else? And he thought about it. I said, it's going to be rough. I could see exactly where the press was going. And fake news. He's a fine man. And so... We hadn't started the process, and I thought it's easier before we start. But I read things that were just unfair. and he's just too good. He doesn't deserve it. What? Well, that might be. I like Sue Gordon. And Sue Gordon is there now, and I like her very much. I've always liked Sue Gordon. It could be. Yeah, it could be. We'll make another choice, and Sue will be, she's there now, and certainly she will be considered for the acting, and that could happen. We'll probably be talking about it either later today or next week. You like Sue Gordon? No, I think he was just treated very badly, very harshly by the press. And he really had a decision to make. You want to go through this for, it could be months. And I said, I think I see exactly what they're trying to do. Nobody understands the press, but I think I understand them as well as anybody. And I didn't think it was fair. No, they didn't. I think he would have had support. But again, we were very early in the process. We hadn't even started. So we were very early in the process. And I think he would have had good support, certainly from the Republicans.
They seemed pretty chilly.
You what?
They were pretty chilly at first.
I haven't seen that. I can tell you the Democrats were chilly. That's for sure. But the Republicans, I think, would have been very good. But a lot of the Republicans didn't know John. But I think he would have had good receptivity, and he was getting that. But I believe he made the right decision. You understand? Well, no, you vet for me. I like when you vet. No, you vet. I think the White House is a great vetting process. You vet for me. When I give a name, I give it out to the press, and you vet for me. A lot of times you do a very good job, not always. I think if you look at it, I mean, if you take a look at it, the vetting process for the White House is very good. But you're part of the vetting process, you know? I give out a name to the press, and they vet for me. We save a lot of money that way. But in the case of John, I really believe that he was being treated very harshly and very unfairly. No, I tell you what, I think he would have had very good support. The Republicans love John Ratcliffe, and I think he would have had very good support. Now, he wasn't in that world that much. I think he would have picked it up very quickly. But I think he would have had great Republican support, probably would have had no Democrat support, which would have been nice to get some. But I think he would have done fine. But it would have been a long, hard slog.
Another question, if you don't mind, sir. The tweet that you put out about Elijah Cummings had attempted burglary on his home.
Well, that's okay. I don't mind that. The tweet itself was just really a repeat of what I heard over the news. I know his house was robbed, and I thought that was too bad. That was really not meant as a wise guy tweet. I mean, his house was robbed, and it came over the news at a certain moment last night, and I had just mentioned it. Well, I think China, number one, you have to understand, we are so far behind. We have been treated so badly, and I don't blame China. I blame our past leaders, our past presidents, our past trade representatives. They've done a terrible job. China, we can't just go and make an even deal with China. We have to make a much better deal with China, because right now they have a very unfair playing field. And I'm turning it around. So we're getting 25% of $250 billion. And now we'll be getting 10% of probably close to $350 billion. It's a lot of money. China has to do a lot of things to turn it around. But you'll be seeing. They've got to do a lot of things. It goes on September 1st. And frankly, if they don't do them, I can always increase it very substantially. In other words, I could increase it. If I wanted to, I could increase it to a very much higher number. Well, it's in a process right now. I know the case very well. It's a very sad situation. It's heartbreaking. But that's in a process right now, so I'm not going to get involved in the process. As you know, they're going to be making a final decision, I guess, over the next 10 days. So I won't interfere with the process. Say it.
How many troops do you withdraw from Afghanistan?
Well, we've been moving it down. We've been moving it down from Syria. We defeated the ISIS caliphate, and we have now 100% of that. We have 2,500 prisoners, and Europe is going to have to take them, or somebody's going to have to take them. But we have 2,500 ISIS prisoners, and we've told Europe, hey, some come from France, some come from Germany. They're going to have to take them. So we'll see what happens. But we've pretty much reduced. We've taken it way down in Syria. Ultimately, it'll be down to a very few people, if any. With respect to Afghanistan, we've made a lot of progress. We're talking, but we've also made a lot of progress. We're reducing it. We've been there for 19 years. We're really serving as policemen. We could win Afghanistan in 2 days or 3 days or 4 days if we wanted. But I'm not looking to kill 10 million people. What about it? We could win that war very easily. I could win that war in a week if I wanted to. But I'm not looking to kill 10 million people, okay? Many of them would be innocent people. I'm not looking to do. And I'm not talking nuclear, by the way. I'm talking totally conventional. But I'm not looking to kill millions of people in Afghanistan. That I can't tell you. I mean, you know, we'll find out. Well, I hear he's done a good job. I don't know Congressman Hurd, but I've heard he's done a good job. We differ on certain subjects, but I've heard he's actually done a good job. It's too bad he's leaving, but really don't know him. So I do have a short list. I have a list of a few people. We're looking at very well-known people. People where the vetting would go very easily because that's what they've been doing. They're in the intelligence world. So we do. I have a list of three people that I'm going to be working on over the weekend. We're going to Bedminster. I'll be working on that over the weekend. And probably on Monday, I'll give you an answer. And I do like Sue Gordon very much as acting, as your, as per your point. Say it again.
Who would you like to debate? You said you were light on.
Well, I think we have a lot of good people. We have three people specifically. I mean, I could tell you.
Yes, tell us the name.
I could tell you. They're right here.
Who are they?
Right there. But it's too early. You want a piece of the list? Go ahead.
As far as peace negotiations with the Taliban, can the Taliban be trusted to be trusted?
Well, I don't want to say if they can be trusted or not. Look. History, I would say, is not so good, but they don't like us much either. But we've brought them down. We've brought the number of soldiers down very substantially. They're coming down. We are talking to them. We have a lot of advantages making a deal with us. We're doing very well, as you know, with Pakistan. I met a gentleman who I liked a lot, as you know, last week from Pakistan. I have a lot of respect for him. We have a good friendship, a good feeling, good chemistry. And I think Pakistan will help us, and I think others will get involved. But we've been there 19 years. We're not really, let's put it this way, we're more policemen than anything else. And that's not for our soldiers. And I've said it a lot. We could win the war in Pakistan. We could win the war, if you look at it, and you could look at it any way you want. We could win the war in Afghanistan in less than a week. But I'm not looking to kill 10 million people. And I'm not talking nuclear. But we'd win that war in less than a week. And I have that as an option, always. But that's what we're not looking to do.
How do you avoid a nuclear arms race?
So with Russia, we have been speaking to Russia about that, about a pact for nuclear. so that they get rid of some, we get rid of some. We'd probably have to put China in there. But right now, we're number one, Russia's number two, and China's number three. But China's quite a bit down in terms of nuclear. China's much lower. But we would certainly want to include China at some point. But I would think that the relationship is good. We're trying to have a good relationship. It's very hard in light of the phony witch hunt, which is now dead. But I will say this, with Russia, if we could get a pact where they reduce and we reduce nuclear, that would be a great thing for the world. And I do believe that'll happen. We have discussed it. I've also discussed it with China. I've discussed it with President Putin. I've also discussed it with China. And I will tell you, China was very, very excited about talking about it. And so is Russia. So I think we'll have a deal at some point. But the particular pact you're talking about that expired as of today, they weren't living up to their commitment. And I said, if they're not going to live up to their commitment, then we have to more. We always have to be in the lead. You know, I've redone our nuclear. We have new nuclear coming. I hate to tell that to people. I hate to say it because it's devastating. But we've always got to be in the lead. Hopefully, and hope to God, you never have to use it. Say it. We have new everything. We have the finest military in the world. We make the finest equipment in the world by far, whether it's fighters, whether it's missiles, whether it's the ships, whether it's submarines. There's nobody to compete with us. But if we could hold off spending by getting a pact with Russia and with China, that would be very good for all three countries. You're talking about the trade with the on beef? EU is very tough to deal with. They're very difficult. They have barriers. They had barriers on beef. We broke that barrier today. I appreciate it. It's a group of countries, as you know. We love those countries. But for dealing with them, they're very, very difficult. But we did a very big deal today, beef, and we're going to be selling them a big percentage of their beef. And that's great for our ranchers and farmers. So we were happy to do it. Auto tariffs are never off the table. If they would not treat us fairly, which they're not, I mean, you know, it's right now. Look, the EU has tremendous barriers to us, but we just broke the first barrier, and maybe we broke it because of the fact that if I don't get what we want, I'll put auto tariffs, because it's all about the automobile and it's all about the tariffs. If I don't get what I want, I'll have no choice but maybe to do that. But so far, they've been very good. And I want to thank Mexico. The numbers are way, way down. Apprehensions. The numbers are way down. Mexico, they have about 21,000. They actually now have maybe more than that on our border. They have another 6,000 on their northern border, okay? If you view it that way, their northern border near Guatemala. And I will tell you, Mexico is doing a great job. Well, I would love to see, before we talk about Secretary, I will tell you, I would love to see the Democrats sit down and work out the loopholes in 20 minutes, because that's what it would take, and work out asylum. But we're moving along with an asylum fix, an asylum bill. Lindsey Graham's heading it up very capably, and we'll see what happens.
If the trade war with China continues, that there will be further bailouts for farmers.
I'll always help our farmers. Our farmers were targeted by China, and our farmers, frankly, these are great patriots. I'll always help our farmers. There'll be a time when the biggest.
Coming up next, we know the president does a lot of offhanded statements. Coming up next is Robert Barnes is representing the Covington boys that were assaulted by many newscasters and journalists and so on. And here's what a brief interview with Robert Barnes, and he's going out there pro bono helping these boys get some get some charges against those people that destroyed a bit of their life. So here we go with Robert Barnes' interview. Good guy.
Joining us now exclusively, attorney Robert Barnes, who is providing his services pro bono for the students from Covington Catholic High School. It's my understanding that they are not being named, sir. Why?
The reason is to protect their anonymity. So you had someone like Kathy Griffin who called for them to be doxxed, called for them to be named and shamed. Many of them were doxxed in their local community. They received threats over the phone, threats through email, threats to their homes, threats to burn down their school, threats to their lives. You had Hollywood directors putting their physical bodies through shredders and posting that online. So because of the kind of threats they've experienced, the goal is to protect their anonymity as minors so that they're not further attacked and subject to further threats. And the law allows that to take place.
The lawsuit against the Washington Post, though, was dismissed. How do you think this one can proceed?
There are really two different claims. So the lawsuit against the Washington Post was brought by a different lawyer who had a different legal theory. What the Washington Post did is they reported certain false statements. But when we requested on behalf of the clients that I represent that they print a correction, they did so. And in Kentucky, under Kentucky law, they treat institutions as different than individuals. That's part one. And part two, the Post didn't issue the defamatory opinions of the people that we sued. And the Post did issue corrections in ways that none of these defendants did. The reason they're being sued is because they used their big platforms to lie and libel about these kids and have refused to issue any correction at all.
Let me read a couple of those tweets that have you so upset. First of all, from Kathy Griffin, the comedian. The reply from the school was pathetic and impotent. Name these kids. I want names. Shame them. If you think these blank wouldn't do it, wouldn't dox you in a heartbeat, think again. And then from Matthew Dowd, folks, let us not let these kids, their parents, and their school off the hook, regardless of what led up to this. This is awful. S.E. Cupp, conservative analyst over at CNN, wrote this. She said, hey, guys, seeing all the additional videos now, and I 100% regret reacting too quickly to the Covington story. I wish I'd had the fuller picture before weighing in, and I'm truly sorry. That's the kind of thing you want the others to do?
Oh, precisely. Even Congresswoman Omar, who's never had a problem with the kind of words she's chosen to use, has almost never retracted any of her rather interesting statements over time. Even she issued a retraction and a correction within an hour of our request. All the institutional press covered the fact that an independent investigation completely cleared these kids of any wrongdoing. They did nothing racist. They weren't taunting or harassing anyone. They thought he was participating with them initially from what took place. They had no idea that they would have the social media lynch mob led by people like Maggie Haberman, a lead political reporter for the New York Times, or Senator Elizabeth Warren, who is right now one of the leading candidates for the Democratic nomination for the presidency, both of whom refused to delete or correct or retract or issue any apology for their false statements about these kids. Kids they didn't know about an incident they never saw or witnessed.
Elizabeth Warren, her tweet was covered in Alicia's report. I wanted to read one from Deb Holland, the congresswoman from New Mexico. She writes, a Native American Vietnam War veteran was seen being harassed and mocked by a group of MAGA hat-wearing teens. The fact that she's a member of Congress, does that not give her some protection?
There's a common belief out there that the speech and immunity clause, which also has a statutory component, immunizes congressmen and senators. But there's a famous case that came up involving the Sundquist case, where they said you have to be within your official duties to be immune. So the senator from Massachusetts, Senator Warren, the congresswoman from New Mexico, were not acting within their official duties when they decided to lie and libel some kids from Kentucky. And so I think that's what the law will hold, and I think that's what the courts will find.
People were to apologize, the senator, the congresswoman, if they were to apologize and issue some kind of a retraction, would that be enough for you, or would the suit go on?
The suit at this point would likely go on, but we are offering remedies to each of them. We're receiving support from the Free America Law Center, which is providing helping court costs and things of that nature. So there's going to be some items they need to pay as part of that settlement process. But the families still remain open to people coming to terms with what they did, correcting what went wrong, so that it doesn't happen to any other families or any other kids in the future.
Robert Barnes, the attorney representing the Covington Catholic students. Robert, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Even a senator or a congressman, if they're not acting in their official capacity, they can be liable for their what they say. And these Covington boys were not wrong on this. And this this Native American came up beating a drum, and so they just naturally and quickly jumped to conclusion. Many of the people that saw this and said, those boys are taunting them and all this. The boys did nothing to incite or taunt this Native American or anyone else there. They were well behaved, and they were a group visiting. And so as a result, all these people just jumped all over them, and they really shouldn't have. Getting to this shooting in El Paso, it started this morning, and there were live witnesses stating one lady in the parking lot saw a gunman with a rifle. He had a black shirt on. He had some kind of ear protection, and he had cami booster pants on, and he shot three or four ladies out in the parking lot and shot other people, and then he went into the front door of the Walmart there in El Paso. This was a live witness. She maneuvered her car around and got her mother and I think her young son in the car and started driving out of the parking lot. But there seemed to be chaos with people running everywhere in all directions. And so it got to be very, very hectic. I was watching many of the live feeds coming in from El Paso early this afternoon before broadcasting this program. And there were a lot of differing kinds of reports. There were the major networks covering it. And Fox Network seemed to have people on the ground and close in. What it came down to was that there was one shooter that was finally apprehended and detained and handcuffed. There was possibilities of other cohorts that were reported of additional two people being detained. There was multiple deaths. And it was reported perhaps 10 died and 18 to 20 were taken to hospitals, some of those in critical condition. I'm going to, towards the end of this broadcast, I'm going to give you some of the latest information. But right now, we're just going to talk generally what's going on in this country. And what's going on in this country is very, very hectic. We've got the Democrats. Oh, one point I want to make is in listening to and covering the James Comey episode that we covered, and Tucker Carlson did some great interviewing on that alone, was it seems to me that I'm getting information about the Comey non-indictment or whatever, non-criminal charges from the DOJ, Department of Justice. I'm getting reports from a lot of ancillary news, you could say, broadcasters, that seem to be an idea coming out, and I haven't verified this totally yet, but I'm picking it up from different sources there in this collage of disorder out here and confusion and chaos, is that it seems like what may be put forward, and this can be very devious and very deceitful, is that the FISA applications, there's great evidence that that the FBI and other officials knew that some of the information in there had not been properly verified, especially the Steele dossier, the Christopher Steele dossier. But they went ahead and went with it to create the ability to start, you could say, surveilling the Trump campaign during the campaign and then during the transition and even into his these first year or so. So at the same time, James Comey was meeting with the president and misleading him about the Christopher Steele dossier. There was all kinds of meetings going on. And then we have all these process crimes that the Department of Justice were pursuing also. We have a very dangerous situation in the sense that there are holdovers that were never let go and dismissed from our government they're continuing to contrive and to conjure up this attack on President Trump. Now, Trump has his problems and he pops off at times. I still think and perceive that Trump has deep down in him a very, very patriotic, you know, belief in this country. He's more of a pragmatist, and so that's the way to actually perceive him more than any other way. He's very pragmatic in his approach to things. That's why sometimes you'll see that he'll make a decision and a few days later he'll be on the other side of it or something. He'll change his decision and his opinion to perhaps make something happen or to make an agreement or whatever. And so that's a classical example of very pragmatic people. They're not always that principle on certain issues. Now, what's dangerous right now is what's happening in China. It's not good what's happening over in China. We have a couple of things that are operative. We have the demonstrations that are occurring in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong and Macau are two separate territories, one under Portuguese law and the other under British common law. And they were set up at the end of the leases, the 99-year leases that the British and the Portuguese had with China. But they were set up as independent, see what I mean, of China. At the end of those leases, the Chinese mainland government agreed for a 50-year period, which these two, you could say, territories, Hong Kong and Macau, would be administered under their respective Portuguese and British law, which they had been administered for 99 years. And then they would go back to the regular Chinese law that was in effect. But the Chinese now were trying to put through an extradition treaty where they could grab anybody out of Hong Kong they wanted. And this what aroused the people of Hong Kong. And there's been all hell to play since. Next we're going to, there's going to be real violence there. It's rumored that the Chinese are marshaling, troops on the mainland ready to go into Hong Kong area, which consists of, quite a few islands. And go in and establish order. The mainland Chinese communist is reported to be sick and tired of all this protest movement in Hong Kong itself. We're going to go next to some clips on the shooting out in El Paso. So here we go next with that.
This moment, this shooting started around 10 o'clock in the morning at the Walmart in the Sierra Vista Mall area. 911 calls started coming in to El Paso police around 10 o'clock. A lone gunman entered Walmart and began firing shots. He's been identified as a white male in his 20s. There were multiple people shot, and El Paso police have confirmed multiple people dead. I know you've seen a lot of numbers out there, but we haven't confirmed and pinned down an exact number right now. Some of the numbers that we do know, again, multiple confirmed deaths. And that shooter, I do want to, before I get to the numbers, I want to reiterate that that shooter is in custody, was apprehended without resistance, according to El Paso police. And so he is in custody, and El Paso police are saying they believe that he is the lone gunman, and there is no imminent threat to the community right now at any other locations. Any other reports of other shootings at other malls were all deemed and vetted to be false, according to El Paso police. So we are just talking about the Cielo Vista Mall area, and the video you're seeing on the right side of your screen right now is video from witnesses both inside the Cielo Vista Mall a moment ago, and now you're seeing inside the Walmart Sam's Club area. You see that lady in the yellow shirt with some blood on her pants and a tourniquet on her arm being helped out by an El Paso police officer. So some of the numbers that we also have confirmed. At Del Sol Medical Center, 11 patients is what they've received at this point. 9 critical, 2 stable, ages 35 to 82. And at UMC, they have received 13 patients. And involved, actually, we are getting an update now. Let's take it live.
6 or 7, but most of them did not have severe injuries to this extent. So we did a very good job. This is the biggest multi-casualty event I've actually been involved in, not just shootings. Yes, sir.
Yes, so my name is Jaime Jimenez. I'm with the Consulate General of Mexico. And since this incident happened on Saturday, We know many people from Ciudad Juarez, Mexico County, the city. Do we know by any chance how many Mexicans were injured?
We do not know. Obviously, it's a fluid situation. Things that we hear now may not be true tonight or tomorrow. But my understanding is we did not get any Mexican nationals from the event. But that's really, we're not really sure yet.
Bethany Brinson, USA Today. Were any of the suspects treated here?
Not to my knowledge. Do you know?
We do not have any knowledge of that.
If I could just stress, our role at UMC is to care and heal. That is our mission. That's what we do. Identifying in terms of nationality, that's something that, of course, will come later. But our main objective here is to take care of those patients when they arrive with us. Devin, go ahead, sir.
Luis Garcia from Telemundo. Are you guys expecting any more people injured?
Most likely not. If another facility got a patient and they need some higher level of care, then we will take them and transfer. But right now, we don't expect any more victims from the scene.
I can tell you that from the site, we've been made aware that there are no other patients or victims that are being planned to be transferred. And so, as Dr. Tarak mentioned, being a level one center, we may get transferred from other hospitals if they need a higher level of care. And I will tell you, we do prepare for these kinds of events, never to this extent. But we have surgeons and every specialty on site 24/7 a day. I can tell you when I went down there, we had as many as 40 or 50 people standing by, physicians, nurses, everyone ready to provide care and waiting on anybody coming in. I want to thank Judge Samaniego and Commissioner Stout for being on site and being able to work with us as well, and many other organizations that were able to assist us. This was one where everybody really came together. Appreciate a lot with the Texas Tech level of expertise. Their surgeons are amazing. And our associates, both at El Paso Children's and University Medical Center, came here and all have worked tirelessly to make sure that we provide the best possible care.
I'd like to make one comment.
So if you want to do something that can really be of value, please consider donating blood. But do not come to the hospitals to donate. Contact Red Cross or United Blood Services, because there will be requirements for more blood transfusions in the next few days. So please go to UBS or speak with them, because it's not just today or tomorrow. It's going to be weeks ahead. And summer is a time we are always short on blood transfusions. So please help us.
All right, ladies.
One last question. We saw a young girl get wheeled in a couple hours ago. We know kids are involved. Can you speak at all specifically to the aspect of the children who, you understand, got some mild injuries and maybe here from the shooting? Can you speak to that at all and how they're doing?
Really can't. No, we really can't at this point.
But you did get multiple from the scene or from that were transferred?
We know we received two children.
Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming. We do appreciate you helping us cover this event. And by gosh, let's say a prayer for those families and all the victims involved. Take care.
Absolutely. And that was ER Doctor, Dr. Tyrock with UMC CEO Jacob Cintron and Ryan Milkey with certainly some new information. We have from two different sources, mm-hmm. the name and age of the alleged shooter.
Yeah, ABC News confirmed to two different sources that the suspect, 21-year-old Patrick Crucius. Now, all we had heard from El Paso Police earlier was that it was a white male in his 20s. Mm-hmm. ABC News confirming with two sources that it is 21-year-old Patrick Crucius. I want to go back to what was being said at UMC. You heard it right there, the call to donate blood. If El Pasoans want to help, we have the El Paso Community Foundation website also. That's one way to donate money. Mm-hmm. The call right now is to donate blood because that's how you can help these victims.
And they remind you to not go to the hospital, to not go to UMC. And this is a crisis situation at UMC right now and at the other hospitals as well. So don't go there. Please go to the Red Cross and United Blood Services. Just roll up your sleeve. I know, you know, the streets are empty right now.
Right.
And so you can get there. That is the number one priority right now, to go to Vitalat at 424 South Mesa Hills. And if you're on the east side at 1338 North Zaragoza, please roll up your sleeve and donate. And in Las Cruces, because, you know, this is a community. This is our home. This
We're
is our community. We are the borderland as a whole. And we are all in mourning after this terrible, terrible tragedy. Mesilla Valley Mall, 700 East Telshore in Las Cruces. Please go out there and donate. And once again, They mentioned that two children were transported.
Two children transported to University Medical Center. We also had Saul over at Del Sol, so we're still working to get more information. We want to send things now to JC Navarrete for a look at if you're heading out, what's closed off, where can you go, and especially if people are unaccounted for, what is the reunification zone? JC.
Mauricio Stella, yeah, that's right. Let's just first get started with what's needed. Donations are needed. Water and ice are being accepted right now at the Pebble Hills Regional Command Center. Now, the FBI tweeted out a little bit ago, or about an hour ago, saying not to go towards the reunification center to drop off water and ice. Instead, you are being urged to drop off water and ice at the Pebble Hills Regional Command Center there in East El Paso. So make sure that you're doing that. Going back to the blood donations that are needed, the Mesilla Valley Mall area, traffic's looking pretty clear here for I-25. So if you're taking a drive there, you want to donate blood, make sure you're doing it at the Mesilla Valley Mall and that food court there in Las Cruces. Back here in El Paso, we want to remind you, it seems like Vitalant is at a capacity right now. Just a lot of good coming out of this horrible situation there on South Mesa Hill. So what you're being urged to do is give them a call, schedule an appointment for tomorrow. People are actually being turned away right now because of the flood and floods of people that are heading out to do some good. No word yet if the east side location is facing that capacity problem, but go ahead and call ahead there, 1338 North Zaragoza, for those blood donations that are needed. We remind you, Vitalant is at a capacity for West El Paso. Call ahead, make an appointment for tomorrow. Now we take you back to the active scene here of the crime itself, the Cielo Vista Mall, right here where my hand is, Walmart, Sam's, the Hooters area. All of this area is completely blocked off, so don't try to go there. If you're looking for a loved one, do not head to the mall. Head here. You can see it's not far from there. This is just off Morley Drive here. We're talking about MacArthur Elementary School. That's where you need to go if you are looking for a loved one. The exact address is on your screen, 8101 Wittes. Do not head to the mall. This is going to be the reunification zone. Now, as to what's closed, Mauricio, we wanted to let you know that Gateway West at Hawkins remains shut down. Viscount Boulevard is open. Make sure you're taking Viscount, Edgemere, or Montana. That's going to be the best way to avoid these spots. For general traffic purposes, I-10 at McRae is open as you're heading west, so that the interstate's not being affected. That's huge news. Airway itself is open for I-10 West, but here's what we're seeing. This is that Gateway West area. That is what's blocked up. Don't head there. That's going to be the best way to get around this area. So we also have the route to UMC. Good news here is that UMC remains operational in terms of traffic. No delay here. These streets are not closed. However, there's heavy police activity that is redirecting traffic. The last thing we want is for an ambulance to get stuck in any delays. So traffic is open. However, there's a heavy police presence there. We do know that Reynolds, north to south, remains open. A little bit of a delay there, as well as Paisano, north to south.
We're at the end of our broadcast. Thank you very much for listening. We covered this El Paso shooting and tried to cover that our last 10-15 minutes to try to respect what happened out there. And also, if someone happens to be listening to this, they can get some good information about where to donate blood and so forth. But there were a lot of deaths out there. They're not confirming much of anything right now. So you'll have to just tune in to the news and try to get the latest later. Thank you for listening. God bless everyone. We're praying for those that lost their lives.